Welcome to Three Tune Tuesday for Tuesday, June the 6th. I am Bonaparte, your blind skeleton host, and you have found your way to my cozy cottage in the digital countryside. Everyone is welcome. Come on in, have a seat, and be comfortable. There are more than enough oversized, well-cushioned Victorian chairs for all. Three Tune Tuesday is my opportunity to share three songs from the vintage golden age of music and antique phonographs. All the songs I play are from my own personal collection. All were recorded acoustically. This was before the advent of electric volume amplification. And all of them have a truly unique character to them. All of them, of course, are played on vintage phonographs from the time. And all of them are really fun to listen to. Now, this week, I have something just a little bit different than normal, in that I will be using, in addition to my Victrola the 9th, my Victrola the 6th, or the VVV1, to play the first song of the day. I've had the 6th for some time. It was one of the first phonographs in my collection, but it's been put aside for months and months and months, and maybe a couple of more months on top of that, you know, as I ended up working on a few others, such as my 210 and my 9, which are the standard workhorses of the week. But I thought it would be nice to get the 6 back into action, and so that's what we're going to do this week. We're going to kick a song off on that one, so close your eyes, sit back, and let yourself be transported back in time with me, this time to the year 1921. 1921 was the era of Tin Pan Alley. Tin Pan Alley refers to a significant era and a geographical location, both associated with the American music industry. It represents the popular music publishing industry centered around a particular area in Manhattan during the late 19th and early 20th centuries. The term Tin Pan Alley was coined around the early 1900s, inspired by the cacophony of pianos being played simultaneously in a number of recording studios, creating a sound very much like the banging of tin pans. It became the hub of songwriting, of music publishing, and of the commercialization of popular music. The term Tin Pan Alley initially referred to the collection of music publishers located in the West 28th Street area between 5th Avenue and Broadway in Manhattan. It was the epicenter of American popular music during its prime. It brought together songwriters, composers, lyricists, and publishers who collaborated and created sheet music for popular songs, as well as recordings that we get to listen to even today. Now, a lot of influential songwriters that we know of today even emerged from Tin Pan Alley, including Irving Berlin and George Gershwin. A lot of the songs produced in Tin Pan Alley ultimately became part of the so-called Great American Songbook, with many classics that continue to be performed and recorded today. The theme, the Great American Songbook, is our theme for next week, so undoubtedly there will be more music next week from Tin Pan Alley. The song we have coming up first is called My Wonder Girl. It was first released in 1921 and was very much a commercial success, selling over 1 million copies. Now, the copies are a combination of recorded records as well as individual sheets for sheet music, since at the time, sheet music was still the primary form of distributing music amongst the population. This version that we're listening to was performed by Paul Whiteman and his orchestra. Paul Whiteman was known for his very innovative approach to jazz music at the time. In 1920, he had taken over as the director of the Palais Royal Orchestra, which he eventually renamed the Paul Whiteman Orchestra. His goal was to elevate jazz to a more sophisticated level by incorporating elements of classical music, creating what he called symphonic jazz. This rendition of Wonder Girl is by Paul Whiteman and his orchestra from 1921 and played on the Victrola the Sixth. An interesting fact about Paul Whiteman and his orchestra was that later in the 20s, Paul Whiteman ended up hiring a couple of vocalists to sing with him and his orchestra, one of whom went by the name of Bing Crosby. So in a way, you could say that Paul Whiteman was the person who identified Bing Crosby as a great singer. Now, coming up this weekend, next weekend, of course, is Father's Day, at least in the United States and Canada. It's just under 2 weeks. And if you're like me, you're still struggling to find something just right for your dad. No, my dad is getting up there in age. He doesn't necessarily need more things. And I'm certainly not interested in more things, so I'm trying to push my own children toward coffee. Our buddies over at Skeleton Brew Coffee have put together a specialty roast coffee bundle or two for Father's Day. They do have a number of really good specialty roast coffees. Go ahead and check them out. They are at skeletonbrew.coffee. Coming up next, we have a song from the Victor Concert Orchestra. This is Romance in F Minor, Opus 5, a short piano solo piece by Tchaikovsky. It ended up not being a solo at this point in time. An opus number is simply a cataloging system used to identify and organize a composer's works. So if you were to see Romance, OP5, you would read that as the song Romance as opus number 5. The term opus is derived from Latin, like a lot of our words are, and it simply means work. Romance itself, the song, is in the key of F minor, and it's in three movements. The first, Andante, is the most famous of the three, and it's often performed as a standalone piece. It's lyrical, it's romantic, the name of the song is Romance, this goes hand in hand. The second movement, Scherzo, is a little more lively and playful, and it's a contrast to the first movement. And then the third movement is another Andante movement, and it brings the piece to a close. The piece was originally written for cello and piano, but it has been transcribed for many, many, many other instruments, violin, viola, and flute, to name a few. The first ever performance of the piece was given by cellist Carl Davidoff and pianist Nikolai Rubinstein on March 12, 1868 in Moscow. The version that we have here for you today is played by the Victor Concert Orchestra, which was one of the Victor Talking Machine Company's house bands in 1921, and this is played on the 210. So one of the fun and interesting challenges that I have every week with running this show is that I do play these records live. I do move from phonograph to phonograph, and I do move microphones around to get the music coming through. It's always a fun and interesting challenge to adjust the volume as the show goes on to adjust for the and account for the phonograph, the volume of the recording, as well as the microphone. Now, next week, we will, of course, have our regularly scheduled 3 Tune Tuesday at this time on the 13th. Also, next week, we will have our bi-weekly Electric Dreams coming up on Wednesday, the 14th at 8:30 p.m. 3 Tune Tuesday is a weekly show at noon. Electric Dreams runs every second and fourth Wednesdays of the month. Both shows next week will feature songs from the Great American Songbook. It's going to be a lot of fun. Please do tune in and listen. 3 Tune Tuesday, of course, has three songs from the acoustically recorded era of the early beginnings of music. And Electric Dreams, by contrast, has 60 minutes worth of music from the early electrically recorded era. So, whereas 3 Tune Tuesday typically plays songs from prior to 1925 to 26, Electric Dreams will typically play songs from 1927 to roughly 1937, give or take a year or two on either side. It's certainly going to be a lot of fun next week. Now, the last song we have today is Lohengrin, the Prelude to Act 3. This is an orchestral piece composed by Richard Wagner. Lohengrin itself is a four-act romantic opera that premiered in 1850, and the Prelude to Act 3 serves as an instrumental introduction to the third act of the opera. Lohengrin tells the story of a knight of the Holy Grail who arrives in a boat pulled by a swan to aid the people of Brabant. The prelude is a musical interlude. It takes place before the final act of the opera, and it sets the tone and the atmosphere for the events that begin to unfold. The prelude features several important musical themes from the opera, including the famous Grail theme. It's majestic, and it's noble, and it represents the Holy Grail and the divine forces that are at work. Wagner's orchestration is, in typical Wagner fashion, lush, it's expansive, and it employs a wide range of instruments to create a really full and vibrant sound. Played live, the orchestra would include strings, woodwinds, brass, and percussion, all working together to really bring out an emotional impact of the music. The version we're going to listen to is not quite as robust. The acoustic recording technology available at the time was really limiting to the number of instruments that could record simultaneously. But the orchestra here did do a really good job. The version that we're going to listen to is performed by Victor Herbert's orchestra and was personally directed by Victor Herbert. Now, despite the name, and despite the recording also being on the Victor label, this was not one of the Victor Talking Machine Company's house bands. This was an orchestra that was put together by Victor Herbert himself, who was a cellist and a leading composer at the time.
Thank you.
And that is our show for the week. Thank you very much for joining in and spending your lunch hour with me. I do greatly appreciate it. Feel free to send me any comments, questions, concerns, or otherwise any form of request. You can reach me at via email at bonaparte@blindskeleton.one. I'm also on Twitter as @skeleton_1. Go ahead, give me a follow, spread the good Blind Skeleton word. Happy to interact with everyone. Of course, on the webpage, you can browse through the record collection, send in a request. Any request that does get played also earns a 10% off coupon at Skeleton Brew Coffee. So I do see sneaking in through the side door, as she is very wont to do, is the Story Lady. I'm sure she's got another riveting tale to share with us to bring us into the bottom of the hour. Once again, thank you all very much for joining in, and have a fantastic day.
Time once again for the Story Lady.
Hello, boys and girls. Today I'd like to tell you a story I call Davy Crockett. Once upon a time, there was a man named Davy Crockett who had quite a reputation as a frontier hero. He went around for some reason with a dead raccoon on his head, and for this reason, friends of his were always anxious to see him leave. As a result, he spent a lot of time alone in the woods. Here he met up with a would-be rock and roll singer who was even more weird than Davy. Davy would be quietly sneaking past a reservation when his sidekick would burst into song about how many Indians Davy had killed. One day, Davy went to Washington to become a congressman. Caught up in the spirit of politics, he decided to steal Mexico. He gathered some local losers, including a clown whose big accomplishment in life was the invention of a fish scaler called the Bowie knife. Together, they succeeded in occupying a mission called the Alamo. Here, Davy Crockett died in an argument with the Mexicans over who would get the royalties from the screen rights.
Thank you, Story Lady. Be with us next time, boys and girls, when the Story Lady tells the tender tale of the princess who grew a mustache.